If you have a resolution to brew better beer in 2018, here's how to make good on that goal. Pick up the new edition of John Palmer's essential book, How to Brew. The fourth edition, available in paperback and enhanced ebook format, is a 600-page reference guide that can help brewers of all skill levels. Every chapter has been updated and expanded, and there are five totally new chapters covering malting and brewing, strong beers, fruit beers, sour beers, and adjusting water for style. What's more, the new edition has revised and updated information on managing your fermentation. Grab your copy of How to Brew at brewerspublications.com. Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, January 11th, 2018. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, homebrewer Brock Masters shares his experiment in brewing a non-alcoholic homebrew for a friend who can't drink alcohol. Did Brock brew a non-alcoholic beer? And was the beer he brewed delicious? Stay tuned. If you go to basicbrewing.com, you can find archives of our audio and video shows, our DVDs, our brewer's logbooks, and other Basic Brewing gear. And we got stickers now. If you buy something on the shop, you get a free Basic Brewing sticker to stick on your kegerator or whatever you stick stickers on. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Basic Brewing and find our show page on Facebook. We have a cool Basic Brewing app on iTunes and Amazon.com, and we're found all over the place where fine podcasts are served up. If you'd do us the favor of rating us on iTunes and maybe leaving a nice comment, that'll help new listeners find us. And if you want to support us financially, check out patreon.com/basicbrewing. Steve Wilkes and I shot three videos earlier this week, two for Basic Brewing Video and one for his Shops channel on YouTube. That video is already out there. If you search for Steve's Brew Shop on YouTube, you can see the second part of a two-part series that we shot on making a sizer. It's a sizer that Steve started on camera right on my kitchen counter. You can see the whole process on that earlier episode of him starting the sizer and getting it into the fermenter. After racking onto apples and flavoring with ginger, the sizer is now ready to taste, and big surprise, it was delicious. I also posted a link to that video on our Basic Brewing Facebook page, so you can find it there as well. The first of the Basic Brewing video episodes that we shot is about my Lemon Drop Golden Ale. It's a very tasty Belgian-inspired beer that I did a hop stand to flavor with the Lemon Drop hops, and just all about the hop stands nowadays. I'm planning to post that one on Monday for the general public, but our financial supporters at the $5 level on Patreon will see it a few days earlier. And I'll also post the recipe on the Patreon site for all supporters, supporters of all levels, rather. And thanks to everybody who has been kicking in on the Patreon thingy. I'm still obsessing about my Instant Pot. My wife got me one for Christmas. I talked about it last week, and Nathaniel Senth from Lightheart Brewing Company up in Vancouver that you heard on this show wrote to me. He says, I first just wanted to thank you for spending your American money on the Canadian peso. He says the Instant Pot is from a Canadian company. I've been a, quote, pothead for almost 3 years and still mine at least once a week, often more than three times a week, Nathaniel says. Often we throw some meat and a malty beer in our Instant Pot for Taco Meat Thursdays. Mmm, that sounds good. Such tender, tasty meat. I've also used it for lacto starters before, to great success, especially using lacto plantarum health supplement pills. So thanks, Nathaniel. I mentioned last week that I wanted to use the yogurt function of my Instant Pot to do some wort souring, and it sounds like that's essentially what Nathaniel's doing there with his lactose starters. I'm hoping to get ingredients this week to do my own experiment. In the meantime, I'm spending way too much time watching Instant Pot videos on YouTube, and a couple of words of advice for people who are making cooking videos. Those words are microphone and or tripod. Seems like there are two camps to most cooking videos. Those shot well that sound like they were recorded in a gym shower room, and those that sound good but make me seasick because they're shot with a phone with one hand while the food prep is being done with the other hand. It's a shame because there's a lot of good content in the videos, but you know, the production is distracting. Enough of my old man snarky video production comments. How did I go off on that? I don't know. In my day, we shot with tube cameras that weighed 25 pounds and recorded on separate decks that weighed more than that. And the video was grainy when it was dark and you got streaks of light when the headlights went by, but we liked it. We edited it on tape, not computers. If we wanted to go live somewhere, we had to have a giant truck. From old, outdated technology, let's shift to talking about stuff that works, like electric brewing gear from our sponsors, Desiree and Dave from High Gravity in Tulsa. I saw a tweet from listener Jim out there on the East Coast who said, started brewing at 8:30. It's now 11:10. Electric brew in a bag, homebrew inside, rocks. High Gravity system is so awesome. Jim says, saw these way back in Philly. Seeing you guys, meaning us, use them pushed me over the edge. Two friends have since purchased as well. Well, glad to hear Jim is enjoying his High Gravity system, and I sure like my electric brew-in-a-bag system with the Warthog controller. Makes it super easy to control mash temps, boil levels, and even do precise hop stands. And you'll see my system on the next Basic Brewing video with the Golden Ale. High Gravity has a wide range of turnkey electric systems, from your basic brew-in-a-bag systems to, multi-vessel systems, and many different controllers at highgravitybrew.com. You can find them there. And Desiree says the offer code EBC75BB is still active. You can use that code to get $75 off your electric gear purchase. EBC75BB at family-owned and operated highgravitybrew.com. They take the pain out of propane. Okay, often I get email asking how to make non-alcoholic homebrew. And there are many reasons why someone would need to remove alcohol from their diet, but it would be great if there was a way to keep delicious beer in the diet. Well, Brockmasters took on the challenge for a friend, and he sent us a couple of cans of his experimental brew to taste and to talk about. Brockmasters, welcome to Basic Brewing Radio.
Hi, James. Thanks for having me on the show today.
You're calling in from chilly Chicago, and we're talking about a delicious beer that you made. Before I want to get into that, let's talk about your brewing background. How long you've been brewing, and what do you like to brew?
Yeah, so I've been brewing now for about 3.5 years, and it all started about 4 years ago. My wife and I were moving to Chicago. From Toronto, Canada, and my brother had a couple of glass carboys that had been sitting on his front porch for probably 3 years, and he had them for decoration. And so he was moving, and he said, hey, you want to take these with you? So they sat in my garage probably for about the better part of a year and a half, and a coworker of mine, her husband, was making hard cider. And so I was kind of interested, and I said, hey, what's that all about? And she said, oh, it's really easy. You get some fresh-pressed cider, add some yeast, and in 2 months you got something great to drink. So I dove in full force, bought myself 5.5 gallons of cider and made my first batch, and it turned out spectacularly. So that was kind of the introduction to the fermenting and brewing world. From there, I got myself involved in doing some extract brewing, and very quickly got myself into the all grain world. So within a year, I went from doing 5 gallon batches to owning a half-barrel brewery.
Wow. And you have sent in your experiment in making a non-alcoholic beer, and I've made some very extremely low-gravity beers before, and one question that I get a lot is, why? People say, why bother, making a beer with such, low alcohol? Why did you want to make a non-alcoholic homebrew?
So, as I mentioned, I've been brewing for a few years now, and I started making some really nice big beers. My wife's from the Czech Republic, so I started making some nice Czech-style lagers, doing pilsners, I love IPAs myself. I'm a big stout nut, so we do all sorts of Irish stouts here at the house. And a good friend of mine is going through a medical treatment and unfortunately is not able to have any alcohol because of the medication they're on. And so one of the things that was said to me was, you know, I'm really going to miss those real big hoppy beers. All that's available in the supermarket are these kind of lager style beers. They're really on the malty side. They don't have any big flavor. And so I kind of took this upon myself as an opportunity to try something new and try and come through for them.
Yeah, and I've received questions about this periodically. I mean, people really are interested in how to make a non-alcoholic beer because I've tasted some non-alcoholic commercial beers, and they're not, you know, they're not so good, really.
Yeah, they tend to have a real kind of coy sweetness left over. They don't have any kind of particular effervescence or wonderfulness to them. So this, I thought, was a great opportunity to try something new. So what I did was, of course, get on the Google machine and start looking into this. There's a number of articles out there. The Facebook forums were really helpful. And everything I found kind of led down to this opportunity to make basically a full-bodied beer and then boil it. Some of the big concerns there were ending up with a product that was far too bitter. So that kind of prompted me to think, okay, if I'm going to build this recipe, I should dial back the initial bittering hop and then look where I can get flavor in at the backside of the recipe. The other part of it, too, was I had read you get a lot of these cardboard flavors, and a lot of that flavor was coming from oxidation. People were brewing their beer, then transferring it back into the boil kettle and heating it up. And by doing so, you were introducing oxygen. So I really wanted to try and come up with a process that would keep the oxygen from ever touching the product.
And I guess the basic theory behind these processes that people use is that the boiling point for alcohol is lower than the boiling point for water. So in theory, and I think it's what, 170 degrees Fahrenheit?
Yeah, it's 173.5 is the boiling point for ethyl alcohol.
And you probably know, being from Canada, you probably know the metric.
Funny enough, Canada's a weird place. A number of things are in kilograms and a number of things are in Celsius, but your home thermometer's in Fahrenheit. So when we move down here, you know, I know that 21 Celsius outside's a nice day, but 72 in the house is great. I don't know why it is. It's just, it is what it is.
So I think, see, did you say 173? I'm looking at my little chart here, my little cheater chart. This would be like 78, something like that, 77, 78.
Again, I'll take your word for it.
If people are screaming at their podcast devices. I guess the general theory is that you brew the beer, you ferment the beer, and then you reheat it to the boiling point of the ethanol. And then the ethanol leaves the beer, and there you have a non-alcoholic beverage, right?
Yes. Essentially, you're doing distillation, and rather than collecting the ethyl alcohol that you've boiled off, you're letting it evaporate into the air and keeping the byproduct that normally a distilling house would throw out.
And so how did you accomplish this?
So as I mentioned, I'd done a lot of research, and my big fear was getting that cardboard flavor or that oxidation in the product. So I took it upon myself. My setup here at the house is a three vessel system, all 20-gallon vessels, and my first two are electric, and then my boil kettle is propane. So what I was able to do was actually take the keg of beer and submerge it in my electric hot liquor tank, and then with my electric controller, dial in the temperature that I wanted that surrounding water to be at. Now, I will give a plug for a product out there called Tilt. It's a Bluetooth hydrometer that measures temperature as well as specific gravity. This product, what's really cool about it is it's got a pretty wide range in terms of temperature. So you can actually have it go up to almost 190 Fahrenheit, and it will still read out to your Bluetooth device, your iPhone or Android phone. So I was able to actually put the keg of finished beer in the electric hot liquor tank, drive up the temperature around the keg, and monitor the internal temperature of the beer. Once I got the beer up around 170, I dialed back the surrounding water and was able to stabilize the keg at around 175 Fahrenheit. At that point, I used my ball lock on the gas port and started burping off the alcohol vapor.
And could you actually smell the alcohol coming off?
Oh, absolutely. It smelled like a whiskey barn. It was unbelievable. The beer initially, when it went in there, was at 6.5% alcohol. So as it was coming off, there was a quite a strong aroma in the garage.
And you probably want to keep, you don't want to smoke around
No, definitely not.
Now there are some people out there that probably think that you should have hooked up a copper coil to the output of your.
Yeah, there might be a way to get around that no distillation law here in America. No, officer, I'm making non-alcoholic beer. I'm not trying to make whiskey.
And I'm collecting fuel from a vehicle. So how long did you boil?
So once the keg got up to 175 Fahrenheit, I held it there for roughly 45 to 50 minutes, thinking that was probably, and again, that's from everything I read, long enough to boil off the alcohol. I think next time when I do it, because there was eventually, it was found out that there was some residual alcohol in the beer, that I would probably hold it there for a little bit longer, knowing that I'm not doing any harm to the beer and that I'm not heating it up to the point where the beer itself was evaporating.
Yeah, we don't want to get too far into spoilers here, Brock. But so, did the smell of the alcohol diminish over time?
Yeah, absolutely. As time went on, and again, we have good ventilation. The smell of alcohol essentially became nil. So there was no remaining odor surrounding that keg that we had been burping off.
Now, one would think that that you might be burping off some hop character as well if you're heating up your finished beer for a second time.
Yeah, that's a great point. And so I was concerned about that, too. And as I mentioned, I did quite a low hopping at the beginning. I had used only 0.35 ounces of Mosaic as my initial bittering hop. And then when we cooled the beer in the whirlpool, I threw in an ounce of Cascade. So after the sort of boiling off of the alcohol had been completed and the beer was still warm around that 173 Fahrenheit point, I actually force transferred it into another keg that had 4 ounces of hops in it. So 2 ounces of Citra and 2 ounces of Cascade in hop bags. So I kind of almost did a whirlpool temperature steep of the beer. Then as the beer cooled, because it was cold outside, I hooked it up to CO2. And just allowed it essentially to cool on gas in a closed environment.
It sounds like you did a hop stand, essentially.
Yep, exactly. I did a secondary hop stand after the beer had been fermented.
And you pressure carbonated it. If one were to want to bottle condition this beer, you would have to add yeast back in after it was chilled. And the priming sugar as well, but it's a whole lot easier just to pressure carb.
Yeah, and I'm in the fortunate situation where I have that equipment here at the house. But if someone was interested in doing this and then bottle conditioning, they would certainly need to reintroduce some sugar, either through sugar droplets or sugar tabs, and then some form of additional yeast to ensure that the critters had something to eat.
And then essentially you would be adding a little bit more alcohol into the beer at that point because of the re-fermentation in the bottle. But, it has to be minimal at that point.
Yeah, and I know our local homebrew shop offers a lot of homemade soda kits to make things like sarsaparilla root beer. And the way those are carbonated is by introducing a little bit of yeast and sugar at the end. And from what I've told, it introduces very minimal alcohol, and those are safe for kids to drink, so I couldn't see it introducing enough that would create any kind of concern about having any blood alcohol level.
Sure. Is there any other details about the process that we should know?
I think the biggest thing was just, again, managing sanitation, making sure that we were really good with chilling, making sure after the beer was fermented that we were, again, really concerned about sanitation in terms of transferring, and then this opportunity to bring the beer up to 175 plus degrees to ensure that we were boiling off the ethyl alcohol.
Yeah, I think that your point of not transferring the beer from the keg into the kettle again, you know, you're limiting the risk of oxidation. I think that was very smart. You know, and you're essentially
I've had a couple beers in my time that had oxidized some home brews, and they really do have an off-putting flavor. So my big goal in this whole process was to make something that still had that fresh hop forward character while providing a booze-free experience.
So you actually canned these beers. How did you can them?
Yeah, so that's kind of a fun story. I'd been looking into getting a canning machine myself, and for any of your listeners who's ever looked into it, they're not a cheap investment. It's a couple grand to get you started. And so I was up at my local homebrew shop in Libertyville, Illinois, and I was showing the gentleman there the website for this canning machine, and he said to me, "Oh, wow, I should maybe get one for my shop." And I said, "Yes, that's a great idea." So our local homebrew shop for $30 provides the canning machine, the cans, and essentially they'll come back and help you can up all your product. It's a great service. It's a lot of fun, and I love doing it. The great thing about cans is they cost maybe 20 to 30 cents depending on the volume you're canning. And if you're giving beer away or sending it to friends, you know you're not going to get that container back. So it's worth the sacrificial nickel or to can up your product and give that to your loved ones.
There's a cool factor to cans as well.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no doubt that there's a cool factor with canning your beer. It gives it a real craft beer feel, something that people go to their local brew pubs and pick up and bring home. So it's always fun to be able to can something up, give it to friends and family. The other great thing too is that cans are relatively inexpensive. So you're not getting those bottles back that you've invested a piece, and there's no hardship giving out cans and seeing them get crushed and thrown in the recycling bin.
Okay, now Steve and I, you sent two cans, and Steve and I went to Steve's shop to taste, and I also brought a surprise device along. So let's hear how the tasting turned out.
Great.
Steve Wilkes, welcome back to Basic Brewing Radio, and welcome to 2018.
Thanks, James. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, we got a homebrew here from Brock Masters, which, you know, sounds like he ought to be a secret agent or Brock Masters. That's the manliest name I think I've ever since Mitch Steele. Mitch Steele's pretty manly, but Brock Masters,
yeah.
I think he might have him there.
I'm pretty sure he does. I even canned his homebrew.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like the most impressive thing I've ever seen. You're like, you're pouring this, going, it's a homebrew, and ksh, yeah. Really?
Yeah. Try to wash that and reuse it.
Yeah.
So we're tasting here a beer. I haven't told you anything about it other than it is a homebrew. So what are your first impressions?
All right, Pilgrim. Oh, wait, that's my John Wayne. It's not very good. It's very piney, grapefruity, citrusy. I don't get any big bittering hop from it. It's not very bitter. Mm-hmm. It's nicely balanced. It's a little sweet, but in a good way. It's not gloppy sweet or under attenuated sweet. It's just kind of a somewhat Swedish beer.
It's the meatballs that give it away.
That's right. Oh, Dane. Anyway, it's very nice. It's some kind of an APA, I would say. It's not clear. I mean, it's a little bit hazy, but again, not in a bad way. Pretty good head retention, even in our plastic cups. Nicely carbonated. I give it a 7. It's easy to dance to. It's got a good beat.
Yeah, I think it's really tasty. I think it's got a nice clean finish. It's got lots of hop flavor. And aroma. Mm-hmm. It's not high on bitterness. It's got a fairly substantial mouthfeel. The carbonation could be a little bit more, but I think he keg filled the can, that may have something to do with it. But it was quite fizzy coming out of the can, and the head holds well.
It throws off. The finish has a pretty strong peach to apricot flavor. It kind of throws off some stone fruit in that way.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's nice.
Would you, is there any reason why you wouldn't drink this beer? Would you ding it for any, is it missing anything?
No, it's not missing anything in my opinion. I think it's a nice session beer. I can't tell what the alcohol is in it, but I don't think it's very strong. I think it's in the 5% range, 4.5% to 5.5% range. I think it's a nice session West Coast APA. Mm-hmm. Now, I'll probably get slammed because it's supposed to be East Coast, but it's got a lot of that grapefruit and kind of West Coasty hopness to it. It's not very bitter. I think it's really a nice American session ale. That's what I would call it.
What if I were to tell you that this is a no alcohol homebrew?
I wouldn't believe you. Really?
Now, Brock, and we'll go over the technique that he used to take the alcohol out before this, our little chat, and I'll let you in afterwards. But he essentially evaporated the alcohol out of the beer, or at least he says he did. Now, I've got a little trick here, if you want to hold my microphone.
Okay, but we're still just dating.
I have here, you have to point it at me.
Oh, yeah.
I have.
<That's> I won't go there.
Larry Bud Melman. Okay, I have here a blood alcohol meter.
Okay.
Now, and you're supposed to wait 15 minutes before you take the test because to get an accurate reading, because if you drink, it'll be more. So I haven't had anything to drink today, and I took my blood alcohol before I left the house, and I'm going to drink a little more. And then I'm going to do the BAC, and if there's any alcohol in it, it should register.
Right.
Counting down from 10. This is a BAC track meter. 5, 4, 3, 2. All right. Drum roll, please. And it says, still thinking.
Survey says,
still thinking. Wow. This is the longest I think I've ever seen it think.
It can't figure it out.
Oh. 0.07.
0.07.
So there actually is alcohol in the non-alcoholic homebrew.
0.7%. Is that right?
Well, 0.08 is in Arkansas at least is you're drunk. But I'm sure if I waited 15 minutes, it would go down, because I still have alcohol residue in my mouth,
right,
and I'm
right,
blowing
right.
it out. But that says that there is actually alcohol in the beverage. So
well, I feel a little vindicated there, but there can't be much.
Yeah. So what we may want to do is wait 15 minutes and take it again and see. What it is actually, and what we may want to do is compare it with, like, maybe later on I'll do like a standard pale ale or whatever and take a reading doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. And we'll see if it is reduced, if the alcohol is reduced. But there is, according to this meter, there's some in there.
Well, button my britches and I'll butter your necktie.
I'm a little disappointed because I was hoping that, I tried to boil the alcohol out of a homebrew, and it turned out nasty. Now, I didn't do any of the dry hopping, or I didn't do any of the, playing with the hops afterwards, and it was just, I boiled it, and then I bottled it, and I pressurized it. So, and there was no alcohol in that, but it was nasty. So I was hoping that Brock had found the trick.
Well, me too. I mean, I don't know what to say. It's a really nice beer. I'd drink this a lot, and I had in the a couple of 3 years ago. I'm kind of stammering, maybe because I'm drunk. but a few years ago, I got interested in brewing a non-alcoholic beer, actually for a friend of mine who was going through some health issues, and he couldn't drink beer anymore. So I thought, well, I can maybe take this challenge up, which I never did. But I read a lot of recipes for it, and everything that I got back in the literature was, don't even try. Mm. It's kind of like, you know, people were boiling the alcohol off. Really, the closest to it that I've ever seen that was successful are those extremely low-alcoholic beers that you've brewed with 100% rye, the little 1.5%, 2% porters that you've made with a lot of crystal malt. So I'm not sure what Brock did exactly, but it's really good.
Yeah, it tastes good. I would say he's on the right track as far as flavor is concerned. We just got to figure out, and I don't know of any test that you can do to a beer to see if there's any alcohol in it besides this, besides drinking it and blowing into the thing. And so anyway, so it's a tasty beer. But I think that it failed the BAC test.
Yeah, because I think you wouldn't have gotten a DUI, right? At 0.07, you would not have gotten a DUI.
I guess, yeah. But yeah, but I'm sure, and I think even, you know, we've been sitting here talking for, you know, a couple of minutes afterwards. Let's see if it went down. This is counting down from 13. This is riveting radio.
Well, I'll say.
How's 2018 treating you?
So far, like I'm a pork chop around a pack of wild dogs.
It's a dog-eat-dog world, and I'm wearing milk-bone underwear.
That's right. And you just called all the dogs.
Yeah, the thing also is a silent dog whistle. It's called state troopers is what it's called.
That's right.
And my wife is here driving, by the way. Not at the... Oh, now it says zero.
Zero.
Now it says zero.
Huh.
So, let's think about that. So maybe there's a trace amount of alcohol in there, but not enough to affect my... And I've only had just, you know, a quarter of a...
Yeah,
beer.
2 or 3 ounces most.
But now it's back down to zero.
Well, that...
So maybe it has just enough to register fresh.
Mm-hmm.
Like non-alcoholic beers have, the definition is less than 0.5% of alcohol. Right. So even the NA beers have half a percent of alcohol.
Wow.
So maybe... We'll try this again in a couple minutes, but maybe Brock is onto something.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, I'm really, you know, when I first drank it, I'm just stammering around here because it tastes like a really nice little session beer. So I was right in saying it wasn't very strong, obviously, but I would never have guessed it was non-alcoholic.
And I just realized I took another sip, so I'm gonna have to wait another 15 minutes. but we can do that later.
Yeah.
I might as well just finish this because this is really tasty.
It's very good beer. I mean, I like it a lot.
Wow. So the taste test. I'm gonna have to experiment more with the alcohol part, but the taste test it passed.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, it gets an A+. I mean, it's really a tasty beer.
All right. Thanks, Steve.
Thank you, James.
Sir, first of all, Brock, are you a secret agent?
No, I'm not.
And if you were, you couldn't tell me.
Fair enough.
Okay, so we were both you and I were surprised at the results. I have to say that after we finished the tasting, 15 minutes later, I came back and did another BAC. Test and it measured zero.
Okay.
So what I did was I decided to do some further testing with other beers.
In the name of science.
In the name of science. So I did on separate days. I started, you know, at around the same time of day, and I drank a whole beer in around 5 minutes. And then I took a BAC reading right away, And then I waited 15 minutes and did another reading. So here's how it went.
Okay.
Your homebrew, drank the whole thing in 5 minutes, immediately took a reading. It measured 0.114 on the BAC meter. And then after 15 minutes, it measured 0.17. So how did it measure up to other beers? I tested on a Bell's Two Hearted Ale, which is, I think, the favorite beer in the country right now. After drinking the beer in about 5 minutes, it measured 0.135. And after 15 minutes, 0.022. So that compares with yours at 0.114 and 0.017. I did an O'Doul's. I sacrificed for the science. I did
You're
an old
a good man, James Spencer.
I did an O'Doul's, literally the soda pop of beers. I drank the whole thing, and it measured 0.000, which surprised me. And then after 15 minutes, 0.000. And then you suggested that I do one of my rye-based low-alcohol beers. So I did my SCOBY-soured homebrew, which I figure has an alcohol level of around 1%. After 5 minutes of chugging that beer, it measured the BAC measured 0.030. And after 15 minutes, there was nothing, 0.000. So your beer initially measured, what did you say, 6.5% alcohol?
Yeah, so after taking the hydrometer readings and the beer finishing out at 10.10, we calculated we were at 6.5%.
So the Bell's Two Hearted is 7%. So they're close. So thinking about those readings, it looks like you did reduce the alcohol, but maybe not as much as you thought.
Yeah, and you know, when I found this out after we had spoken, there was obviously some initial kind of feelings of being a little bummed out. And I kind of took a step back and I said, you know what? The beer still tasted great. And I think that's an important factor for the listeners. This was an opportunity to try something new, something I had never done before. And what it didn't do was ruin the taste of the final product. So I'm able to look at this and say, okay, the process did eliminate some alcohol from the brew. Perhaps the next time when I try this, I'll be able to either bring the temperature up a little bit higher or take that process of keeping the beer held at about 175 to 180 degrees Fahrenheit for maybe an initial 30, 40, maybe even 50 minutes. But the most important thing was no oxygen was introduced, and the final product still tasted delicious.
It was very good, and I drank the whole. I felt a little bad chugging that beer in such a fast amount of time because it was a delicious beer. As we said in the thing, it was kind of peachy and there was a little bit of maybe a mango flavor as well, and you know, a lot of grapefruit. So it was a delicious beer. Now remind me how long you did the boiling process this first time.
Yeah, so the beer was brought up to 175 Fahrenheit and it was held there for 45 minutes. And so it seems that probably reduced the alcohol content by a few points. So I think if I do it again, I might drive the beer up to around 180 degrees and try holding it there for maybe 60 to 70 minutes and see if we're able to reduce that alcohol content further.
Yeah, I think you're on the right track. You know, the most important thing is it's a delicious beer. And then, you know, I guess the science is working. If you can smell the alcohol coming out of the output there, it's leaving the beer. It's just a question of how long it's going to take to get rid of it.
So moving forward, when I try this again, I think we'll look at heating the beer up a little higher and maybe carrying on the distillation process, if you will, for a longer period of time. The other thing that came to mind after going online and looking for some means of testing alcohol, I checked eBay and I checked on Amazon, and there's actually some strips that can be used for breastfeeding mothers to test if there's alcohol in their breast milk. So I thought we could actually draw some beer off the keg while we're going through the process and use these strips to actually test the beer for alcohol content.
Huh. I don't know of another way, you know, whether it's taking gravity readings or taking, you know, refractometer readings. You know, I'm sure that there are chemists or scientists out there who can, you know, maybe enlighten us a little bit on how we can actually check the beer for alcohol.
Yeah, I'd love it if any of your listeners out there have an idea, or them themselves have a scientific process for checking the actual level of alcohol in a fluid after the fermentation process has been finished. I'd love to get feedback from them and certainly implement it in my process.
I don't guess it probably wouldn't be safe to light the output of the keg, and then when the fire goes out, the alcohol's gone. Probably not a good idea.
No, certainly not. I was also wondering too if there was maybe a means of driving some CO2 into the keg while it's hot through the liquid output port and trying to push some of that residual alcohol that may be in an evaporated state but still trapped in the keg.
Yeah, I wonder if there is some condensation, you know, where the alcohol is driven out of the liquid and then, you know, condenses on the inside of the keg and then falls back into the... I mean, that's one disadvantage to having kind of a closed system, whereas if you had it like in a kettle or in an open environment, you know, the alcohol could more easily escape.
Yeah, no, that's true. The one big risk there, of course, is then the oxidation factor.
Yeah, yeah. And it was certainly not oxidized. It was nice and fresh, and delicious. So, I would hate to go backwards on that. I tried to do a very small experiment using, I took a couple of finished beers and I put it in a little pot, and I brought it up to the proper temperature and held it there for a while, and I didn't do any, you know, like rehopping or anything like that, and I put it into a PET bottle, and then I had one of those little the caps with the little the ball valve
the little,
on the top of it.
Soda fizz caps, those are great.
Yeah, and so I kind of recarbonated it, but man, it was nasty. It was, and I did the BAC thing. I don't know if I checked it, you know, right away after drinking it like I did these, but after 15 minutes, there was no alcohol detected. But gosh, it's something that I didn't want to drink. I think it was oxidized because there was a cardboard flavor, and all the hop character was gone, and it was just nasty. So I didn't do any more experimentation. So I'm glad that you have done this, you know, to kind of lead us down a better path.
One of the things I think we'll look into next time as well is there's these new great hop extracts out there, and so I thought about maybe brewing the beer and then fermenting it with absolutely no hops in it, and then using some of these different hop extracts that are available to kind of drive that bitterness at the front end and then also drive some of the hoppiness at the back end.
Yeah, or maybe the cryo hops as well, to give a lot of hop flavor in there too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Brock, this has been fun. We talked or we corresponded, yesterday or day before, and you were asking if I wanted to call this off, you know, because it didn't go the way that you thought it would. But I think that this is great. I think that we learn more from sort of failed experiments than our successes. So I appreciate your coming on and hanging in there and going along with the whole process.
Oh, absolutely. I'm sure, as you mentioned, there's other listeners out there who've thought about this, maybe wanted to figure out how they could do it themselves. So if anybody else has some successes, I would love it if you share it on the Basic Brewing Radio Facebook page for all of us to read and take note of your opportunities and your successes, and that way we can all get better as brewers together.
Awesome. Yes, the community of homebrewers is strong, and so I'm sure that there's some answers out there. Well, I appreciate it, Brock. It's been a lot of fun, and I hope that you will keep us in the loop on the next attempt.
Absolutely, James. I'll make sure that I send you out a couple cans in the next round. Thanks for your time today.
Looking forward to it. Well, thanks again to Brock. I consider this experiment to be a success. Even though he didn't eliminate the alcohol altogether, he apparently did reduce it. And more importantly, I guess, the beer was great. I look forward to hearing and I hope tasting more about further experiments. Hey, if you can help us out on how to measure alcohol in a beer that's been treated like this, drop me a line or comment on the post about this episode on Facebook, facebook.com/basicbrewing. We'd appreciate any expertise that you might have. Maybe somebody who does distilling, you know, maybe if you have experience in that and, you know, want to remain anonymous, drop me a line. If you, in the meantime, if you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to James at basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form at basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Thanks to everybody supporting us through our Patreon page. Special goodies coming your way, like early releases of Basic Brewing videos. Check all that out at patreon.com/basicbrewing. Be sure to check out our DVDs, Extract Brewing and Partial Mashing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits. You can find them all on our site. You can get a free Basic Brewing bottle opener with any DVD combo. And you can check out our Basic Brewing shirts in the store as well. You can find our log books. You can track and log up to 50 batches of beer. Check all that out at basicbrewingshop.com. And you get a sticker when you when you make a purchase at basicbrewingshop.com. You get a sticker. I'm all excited about my new stickers. And don't forget that you can join the American Homebrewers Association and subscribe to Brew Your Own magazine through the associate links on basicbrewing.com. It's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer, production help for Basic Brewing Radio, and our website is provided by Kelly Dotson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.